And item 10, my favorite, miscellaneous. Staff report.
I wanted to provide an update on the March retirement applications. We do have an off-cycle payroll that's being run today with all of the remaining March retirements that had completed applications going on payroll. So the majority of the around 110 will be going on payroll within 42 days of their last active paycheck. So I think that's the best in our history. So staff really worked very hard, and I thank them tremendously for that.
Outstanding news, actually. Well done.
And then a short update on Sagitech. We are receiving 5 different modules over the next 2 weeks, so we're coming close to the end of the testing and design part of it. We're also going to be starting to run the payroll in parallel so that we can ensure that the Sagitech core system is working the way that we need it to work, so that it's starting as well.
Excellent. Any questions or comments of Christina on those items? Not seeing any. Both good news. Outside professional report. Mr. Whalen, you're the outside professional in the room that I can see. Happy wife, happy life. So continue on that. All right. It's a tough room. All right. And trustee comments. Are there any trustee comments?
Scott?
Yes, Jerry.
If I could, a couple of comments on the CalPERS roundtable. I attended that along with Jay and Louie. And I just, the only reason I would make a couple of comments is I've done the roundtables before and I've found them very useful, helpful, knowledgeable speakers. This one I was a little bit surprised and frankly a little bit disappointed. And I expressed some of that disappointment. I think it was more a matter of how the presentations were pitched and how they came across. And I don't think it was a bait and switch. I just think there was a fundamental disconnect. The first one was a presentation from an individual from Lacera, which was an overview of specific company risk in public and private sectors. Fair enough. What followed was an hour presentation on DEI and ESG, which wasn't exactly the general comment I thought. But when I was done listening to that, it almost sounded as if Lacera placed more of an emphasis on box checking than they did on returns. The second one was interesting only because, again, it was a little bit misleading. It was 2 law firms, and what are the risks in your portfolio and what trustees should be aware of. And we got a pretty heavy dose of D.C.-based left-wing activist, especially an attorney by the name of Nell Minow. All I could really describe about her was that she's clearly, she even mentioned one of them, a big fan of the, maybe even the president, of the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren fan club. And so basically her presentation was, what are you looking for in the way of transparency, governance? And it was like, okay, but that really wasn't what she said. The last one was a particular favorite of mine. I put that in air quotes. It was a presentation from an organization called Private Equity Stakeholder Project. It was a panel discussion that was basically just hammering private equity. That's all they did for the next hour. They started out by giving a presentation in report card form of about a dozen different equity firms that they'd given letter grades, 8 of which they gave failing grades. A couple they gave Ds and a couple they gave Cs. So I did a little research on the organization afterwards. And it wasn't surprising to hear where they come from, because this is a group that opposes, or I'm sorry, I'll add that one. The organization's website does not disclose the partners or funders involved with the organization. And I asked a question in the chat line, and the answer I got back was, you can look that up online on our 990. In other words, we're not telling you in this public forum. The group focuses on activism against equity companies in housing, healthcare, and energy sectors. They have launched some time ago, and it's ongoing still, a public pressure company campaigns to urge public pension funds to divest from all private equity companies. And to add, you know, just for good measure, the group also opposes the continued use of investment in natural gas, calling it a bridge to nowhere. So So by the time we were done hearing that presentation, we knew where they were coming from. But it was I give credit to organizations that try and put agendas together. It's not easy. It's difficult to bring in speakers, but this was a group of individuals that I think was clearly, especially the last group, was an activist group. And they talked about how they gave the letter grades, which I thought was interesting. Their letter grade criteria included such things as, do the organizations have acceptable labor agreements? That's measurable in any different way, many different ways. Have they ever had any NLRB complaints against them? Will you show me anybody in the collective bargaining agreement who has never had an NLRB complaint, and I'll show you someone who never participated in negotiations. So it was just, it was by the time, I had a couple of comments online, and Jay was kind enough to ask whether or not I'd gotten off my soapbox yet, and he didn't even stay for the last one. But yes, Jay didn't hear the last one, but okay.
There's so many participants to that trustees roundtable, especially online, that you know just kind of sit and don't really participate at half the time as me too. But you can tell Jerry's listening to everything, and, you know, biting back too. So I think that's the way to do it.
And I know how difficult it is to put these meetings together and to get speakers. I just think they got a little bit adrift on this one and went out into the advocacy area. And one of the guys who heads it up from ACERA, is it Hank? No. When I asked one of the questions, he says, we have to understand that not every organization does this kind of stuff. And I thought, that's true. Not everybody is out pounding private equity. I mean, make your decisions about whether or not private equity is the right thing for you to do. The last thing I would say is those of the board members that have been around for a while, I was reminded, and it finally came back to me, that we had a visitor from this organization at about a half a dozen board meetings. And he would make comments during public comment that were apropos of absolutely nothing. They had one thing. They were there to tell us that we shouldn't be supporting one of our private equity partners because they didn't have a collective bargaining agreement that they liked.
I remember that.
Yeah. And that guy just came in and he gave his presentation perfectly polite. But it was just Johnny One Note. He came back. And we should either encourage that organization to come up with a satisfactory, however you define that, collective bargain agreement, or divest ourselves from that. And then he didn't come anymore. So I assume that was all ironed out.
Yeah, it was an investment in Illinois, in Chicago area, as I recall.
A construction project, as I recall. A hotel construction or something like that. So anyhow, again, they do lots of good stuff. I've heard really good presentations from them. But this one was just left a little bit sour taste in my mouth.
Just a bit outside. All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, for my brief comments.
So David may want to report also, but David and I and Greg Terzakarians, if I'm saying that right, I always struggle with his last name, attended the Sigler Guff client conference last month in New York. I thought it was typical for them. It was very interesting. They have four or five subpart performance reviews where they cover aspects of their investments. Because it's a client conference, it's highly confidential material, so we're not going to report specifically about it. But what I will say is we had a fascinating presentation on AI from a gentleman who was associated with RAND. Also had a professorial position, right? Definite educator, but yes, correct. Extremely bright person, clearly. But what was noteworthy about it was the applied knowledge of what's happening with AI in terms of real-time application to investments. And I was educated to some degree about AI that it's completely 100% a numbers issue. It's a mathematical exercise. I think a lot of people at a very high level or topical level think that AI manages to assimilate a lot of data and actually read it, and that's not what happens at all. It's completely a mathematical exercise, as he explained it, way above my pay grade. But I got that message through loud and clear. But we also learned, and can't really talk about it much, but we learned at least with one of the Sigler Guff investments how AI has been applied to allow it to assimilate an enormous amount of data, which helps formulate the investment decision. And it was pretty fascinating. And my takeaway was, it's here. It's not coming. It's here. And it's probably been here for longer than I think. But it was really fascinating to hear it. I wish I could be more specific about it. I can't, largely because I can't really articulate the concepts that we heard about. But I just know the takeaway was, it's definitely here. And the sentiment that he expressed, as well as we've heard from every other speaker on this, is that you have to have human intervention at critical points in the process, or else it's not going to end well. Mm-hmm. So
and you lock in biases that are hard to get out. Yeah.
Yep. The AI technology forms its own biases, and if you don't have human intervention to make some sense of what might be odd outcomes, it's a bad thing. Let's put it that way. So fascinating. It's here, and it's being applied in a way that I thought was pretty creative, actually. Apparently they've had good success with it. I would also state from the conference, David did get the award, the attendance award, from Drew Guff. We sat at the front table and David was present. I missed one of the investment sessions, but David was present for all. So he got the award from Drew at the end, but very nice round of applause for those left in the room, and it was well deserved. The other thing I would point out is just a comment, was that it's the first time at this conference I've observed a kind of a mild sales effect. Hadn't felt that previously at this conference, but there was a bit of a little bit of a sales pitch effect on some of the investment opportunities, which I hadn't previously experienced. So anyway, food for thought. But so that was Sigler Guff. David, did you want to add to that? Or
No, I think your comments are... Yeah,
I know you're modest about the award.
It was good to be out there. it was good to be out there to. I think client conferences are important, and to give us a sense or a flavor of the folks that we invest with. And it was a good conference overall. I appreciate being there and understanding them a little bit better. So.
You know, we probably would do a different travel schedule next time, is what I think, though. Yeah. And that had some... Yeah, that's right. We had our send-off party with Samson at Pleasant Hill BART. Yeah, that was an interesting day. All right, any other trustee comments?
Commenting on some of this, I just got back from the NC PERS annual conference, and there were some topics to touch on briefly. I discussed a little bit about the inflation side of things, but one of the areas of focus in the conference was the whole thing with private credit, and so private equity got a lot of investment a few years back, in part because of this need to chase returns, right? Because the fixed income sucks so bad. And so a lot of money was going into private equity because of hopeful returns. And then that seemed to kind of slid back a little bit. And then we had this big surge into private equity. It's like everyone was coming up with funds and so forth, and then just hiring whoever didn't necessarily have the expertise or experience in the field, but they needed someone to handle the clients and so forth. So it seems like there's a little bit more of a clarification in private equity, which is good. And I think we've had the investments with managers that we felt have been really solid, trying to get into that upper quartile of returns, right, with private equity. Private credit is now seems to be coming up as the next thing. And, I mean, it's been there. We've been involved in it for years. But now there's a chase or starting, it seems like private credit is starting to get saturated. This brings up the concern. Again, you have to be careful about who you're investing with private credit, because not all of these folks are the same caliber or quality. Right? So I think we feel good about what we have with private credit, but I wasn't sure if there was any red flags that you saw coming up in this arena. But and there was a little bit of a sales pitch from some of these folks in private credit also at the NCPERS, but one guy was saying that promising higher returns, private equity-like returns, but at much lower risk.
We've heard that before.
Yeah. So, and he feels that we are in the Goldilocks area for a long time. So we'll see. I don't know how if you had any comments on that. But
so just a couple thoughts. First of all, Stepstone is your private credit advisor, so I'm just coming at you with our Barris's views on this and things I've heard in the industry. So a couple of points about private credit. It is a newer asset class, right? It came about or was born from the global financial crisis where banks just had to move risk off of their balance sheets. And so a lot of the private credit teams came out of banks and started their own shops. So that was sort of the inception of it. That grew reasonably, and as a new asset class with new opportunities, first movers had some advantages. And then with the Silicon Valley Bank debacle, that was accelerated, right? So it's this whole private credit thing is just banks moving their credit operations and their balance their assets off of their balance sheets, which is forming opportunities for institutional investors to step in and fill that gap. There's been a lot of talk about now there's a lot of money chasing these private credit opportunities, and is that going to bring down margins and yields and opportunities? And the likely answer is yes, but to the point about it this being a Goldilocks time in the cycle, I think there are still plenty of private credit opportunities to be had out there as this continues to play out.
Okay.
Equity, private equity like returns with lower risk is nice, but probably not sustainable.
Okay. And then with respect to real estate, comments were that office was still in a hole. And there's more pain to come, and that the vacancy rates still exceed those of the GFC levels. But on the strong side of real estate was the data centers, cold storage, industrial, and so forth. And Tim, on your graph about, I think you said we're down 14% on real estate. Is that negative 14% based on the valuation? Because as interest rates go up, then the valuations for properties go down, because what can you afford to buy kind of scenario, right? But if the negative 14% is on valuations, that's one thing. But has that impacted the income that we realize from our real estate investments? So if there's still a steady stream of income, the fact that the valuations have gone down, I mean, we're not looking to sell these tomorrow. So how much of an impact is that when we see a negative 14% in real estate?
Yeah. So I would say it is largely valuation driven, not transaction driven. There's been a few transactions where there's been realized losses. But the bulk of it is on the valuation side, both from the interest rate levels that you're noting, as well as from, because the office sector is so negatively impacted, and you've seen a couple trades lately that have been at distressed prices, and you can kind of the only trades, and the folks who've been holding an office building and say, well, you know, there's not a good comparable sale, I'm gonna hold it at some, you know, what I believe to be a reasonable level. Now there's a comparable sale. And the comparable sale is at a distressed price. So that distressed price is kind of the only office pricing available. So the office sector is getting hammered from all sides. I'd say the, you know, the overall theme is just been at higher interest rates, you're gonna have kind of a flow through effect on the valuations of most real estate types. It has not been a income gap issue for the valuation. But at a certain point, these are in funds. Funds, you have to sell them to return the capital to us. And I think there's been a bit of a waiting game of people not wanting to sell at lower prices, but other funds waiting to buy at lower prices. And there's going to be a question of who crosses that gap. We're just beginning to see cracks in the volume where people actually going to transact. Like I said, it's mostly been the distressed people that had to transact. You don't have to transact, it's still dragging it. So, unfortunately, I think this is going to, this is good for us in capital on a prospective basis, negatively impacting our legacy portfolio, largely the COVID portfolio. But this is going to be, unfortunately, I don't think this is a quarter or two of ambiguity, and then we're back out of it. This is, we've got a lot of institutional aversion from that. It is largely valuation driven, but at a certain point, people are going to have to.
Yeah, and one of the comments from this one of the speakers was that in looking to buy real estate, you don't want, because you talk about distressed real estate, but the comment was you don't want to look to buy distressed real estate. You want to buy from distressed sellers, quality properties that the seller just needs to get out of.
If I could just add a couple other things to that. I sent Tim a note. It just struck me as fascinating. It was a building in Fort Worth, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, the prior sale was at $120 million. I'm doing this off the top of my head. And the latest sale was for $12
million.
Now, that's a haircut. And, and it's a,
yeah,
that's a class, that's a class A building. And apparently, I think it's the tallest building in Fort Worth. So it's not what you call a piece of crap. And the other thing, too, is I think you're going to see a lot more discussion about the value of these buildings based upon the income, because you've got a lot of see-through buildings out there now where leases are not being renewed. The pro formas are all going down the toilet, and you don't have the income in those buildings, which is probably contributing to the possibility of a $12 million building because they're buying one that's see-through.
Yeah.
So it's... That's going to hurt for a couple of years.
It will. And so, like I said, we haven't seen that income drop in our portfolio yet. And people are talking about this wall of maturities that's coming due over the next couple of years. Take that with a grain of salt. There's always a wall of maturities because you're constantly refinancing debt on the real estate side. But it's the leases coming up. And if, as the leases come up on office buildings and people aren't using the space and they drop that lease, that's, I think, a bigger concern there. Hasn't happened yet, but I think the obvious question is, if somebody's been paying money for 100,000 square feet and they're using it 2 days a week, they're probably going to downsize in the next few hours.
The vacancy rate in San Francisco is like 15%, 18%, something like that. That's
probably higher.
Yeah. Probably higher, and that's a lot of unused space.
Okay. Another topic was the energy transition. Talking about the move to greener energy. And so they started off with a discussion about the power grid in the U.S. and that it's very archaic and that there's 11 different power grid regions across the country that are fairly dysfunctional. They don't talk to each other and so forth. So getting electrons from the East Coast to the West Coast is more problematic than getting them from Canada down to North Dakota or something. So, but I understand there's some federal movement trying to facilitate that situation or improve it.
This is not an area that I know enough about to even comment on.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
They stated that nuclear power was the cheapest form of energy and that gas was the most expensive. And wind and solar are increasingly gaining market share and getting cheaper as time goes on, and that the development of battery technology and usage of that's getting cheaper, and then that facilitates or enhances the ability to capture and store energy driven by wind and solar. So, and the nice thing about solar is that usually you put out a solar farm, and that's kind of your cost right there and some maintenance. But it's not like if you were burning coal, you have to keep buying coal and so forth. The recurring costs are not the same. There's an increase in demand for energy more and more as time goes on, and that data centers, especially with those associated with AI computing and so forth, are driving 40% of that demand. And that gas usage is going out or declining, and in part because old gas power plants are aging out. And building new plants is on the slow side. Although the technology for gas usage is improving with respect to efficiency of getting the power out of that. They also talked about power itself as an asset class. And I know we talked about utilities and so forth, but I wasn't quite clear how that was different than what we said in the past, but they said power should be an asset class to be considered in your portfolio. And then briefly on index investing, there was a speaker who said that passive investments are not risk-free, and that index investing is not as diversified as you would think. So, like with the S&P 500, there's a concentration of stocks that fewer stocks having bigger impacts, which has led to increased volatility in index investing. So just something to consider. And then finally, there was a talk about AI, and we heard some about that from Scott, but it's getting more and more common and just part of what we do and culture and all that stuff. And they recommended that we develop some AI policies and guidelines within our individual systems just to be ahead of things. Like, if you're in the office, do you ever use AI at your desktop? Or, you know, something to explore. So I brought this up to Christina, and she's going to look into that further.
I'll type in a chat GPT query and see what they come up with for a policy.
Yeah, and you'll get hallucinations back, right? Yeah. All right, thank you.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Seeing and hearing none, we stand. Oh, yes, Karen, sorry. Oh, yes, that. Any report on Sackers?
Sackers is great.
Well, there you have it.
I'd like to, the wheels didn't stop turning with me, so I was pretty busy. If anyone who attended has comments, I'd love to hear them. I think overall it went well, and the energy was good, the content was good. But if anyone else has anything to say, that'd be great.
Well, here I didn't attend, so I can't pile on. But I'll be planning to be at the next one. So
I was there; it was fun. It went well. If there was an attendance award, you would have gotten it as well.
All right. I think we stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.